Hey, Holly.
Hey, Dave.
Hey, welcome to part two of our interview with Josie Cotton.
I'm so excited. Josie is such a great guest, and I'm so happy to be back with part two.
This is What Difference Does It Make the Podcast. Let's get into our interview with Josie Cotton.
I'm jumping ahead here, but I wanted to ask you about the release, the Ukrainian Cowboy and Cold War Spy.
Yeah.
How that came to be. I mean, what was the inspiration for it?
Well, it was songs I had had for a while. I never could quite finish them or find the title. And then I just had this brainstorm when I was trying to finish this song. And it just seemed like I had to change the theme of the song a little bit, just to skew it slightly towards Russia. I don't know. And I had this fantasy of what the video would look like, and we made it happen, and it was just really fun. It was just based on my love of history and kind of sad country songs and, I guess, weird polkas going on.
It's very campy. The video is very campy.
And that's what I wanted it, because it's a very sad song if you listen to the lyrics, but I wanted the video to be funny and sad, and that's my favorite combination of odd, funny, sad, and just everything contradicting itself. That was my goal.
Yes.
And kind of being super political without saying anything at all. You know, I didn't make any reference. It was just like the Russian flag and Russian soldiers and people being shot and me running in high heels through the snow and stuff. It's fun.
Yeah, because you wouldn't necessarily get that from if you just listened to the song. That isn't what it conjures up.
Yeah, I did write it like it was a movie. I mean, that's kind of in the Cold War Spy too. That was I've been obsessed with the Stasis and spies for a while, and I just did a whole, I just was able to research it so much that this song that really didn't have a title, it just became all about the 1960s in East Berlin and kind of spy dangerous, really mimicking our time right now in terms of ideas and the danger. I was trying to say something without being political. I just don't see a point, but I was trying to say something in that song too. So I'm glad you heard them. It was a labor of love.
I'll be back.
Recording it, I was so nervous that no one would like it. I didn't tell anyone, and I didn't even tell my band making a video, because I was like, I don't know what I'm doing, but I really have to do this. And so it was like shocking to them, like, what, Russia? What? I don't know. People didn't quite get it at first, but then I just had to like go through the jungle, without listening to anyone. That was how I was able to do it.
I thought it came out great. It was a lot of fun, if you can say that about a song with that theme. I mean, the video was, it looked like you were having fun.
How often can you say the purge of Stalin in a pop song? That was always like,
good point. Never.
Refreshing. Oh, silliness.
So you're obviously a fan of like these schlocky B movies. You have this album, Invasion of the B Girl.
Yes.
What movies did you grow up watching these movies? Do you have some favorites, or what were you like as a child? were you locked in a movie theater? you watch a lot of movies?
This is very therapy like. This is like,
yeah, okay.
Use us.
Yeah.
I'm to.
Just relax.
I was weird. I was the weird like kid, like the girl in in Wednesday in the Addams Family. I was very like that girl. Was just alienated, and with a really dark sense of humor. And I watched all these science fiction movies. I loved them. That was my escape from the world. I mean, I I didn't wasn't quite introduced to Russ Meyers till thankfully later, I found great comfort in knowing there were other worlds, or you know, that I could at least fantasize and leave this planet and, flying saucers. Invasion from Mars, Invaders from Mars was one of my first memories of just flying saucers and everyone in the town being taken over. And this one little boy is the only one left, and even his parents, and they all have this weird staple in their neck and I think I related to just feeling like an outsider, and then they're taking over the town. And I don't know, that appealed to me. And Godzilla, all of that was my, field of vision. And then it continued into my adulthood. I just happen to love the genre, and there's nunsploitation. There's all kinds. I've expanded. Giallo Italian horror, and I just keep upping my aesthetic to include all exploitation movies and
Did you say nunsploitation?
Yes, that's an actual thing. It was in the 70s and the 60s, and there were some insane nunsploitation movies that were just like crazy, and they were so good.
That's good to know. We'll have to check it out. This is the first I'm hearing of that.
And then there were women's prisons movies. I don't know the exact, but that was a genre in that world. And they're great too. You know, it's like, you just can't get enough of that crazy world and motorcycle girls and all of that. It just appealed to me.
I can see why John Waters has taken a shine to you.
Oh.
Why haven't you been in a John Waters movie? Has that happened?
No.
We got to make this happen.
I keep asking myself that. How did that not happen? I don't know. He's got his world going on, and I don't know.
I don't even know if he's making movies anymore, but you did
a
cover.
He's doing a lot of performance. He's doing a lot of, events.
You did a cover of Female Trouble, right?
I did.
So that must have been a hoot.
But that was a hoot. I mean, he asked me, that was supposed to be when it was originally released, for when we originally released that record, he asked me not to put it on because he was doing something with the song for Divine. So I had to replace that song. And just now on this re-release, we put Female Trouble back on the record because I waited a long time, because he asked me. And he loved the record. Obviously he wrote the liner notes. But, that felt great to get that out there. And that's another super wonderful song from a crazy movie. I love all of it. And he wrote that song. He wrote Female Trouble.
All right. So speaking of Female Trouble, sort of, you have on your YouTube page your interview with Merv Griffin. And it's very cringy. How do you hold up? I mean, was this typical of
almost disturbing?
Yeah.
Which one are you talking about? Me when I have on the gold hat, or the one where I'm sitting on the stage next to Melvin Belli?
Yeah, was he the creepy older guy?
Yes.
Oh my God! Yeah. How do you was this what it was like back then for you?
Well, it was that was a really odd night, because it was particularly hard for me to watch that, because the fighting that was going on backstage before I went on of what I was going to wear, my two producers going, take off that jacket, put on this jacket, put on this shirt, take off those boots. And I was trying to do my eye. I had one eye that was done. I had my eyeliner done on one eye, and they put me in this horrible outfit, and I was so uncomfortable. And I just went out, and they just shoved me out on the stage like, hi, Merv, And I was just, one eye was not right in this outfit. But, you just try and take the moment. And the audience was laughing stuff I said. They thought I was being funny, and I wasn't. So that was great, because they were all on the whole audience was, and I'm like, what did I say? And anyway, but they just thought I was hilarious, but I was just trying to, give an interview, and I never understood what they were laughing about.
You were so foreign to the Merv Griffin audience. I'm sure that they'd never seen anyone under 30, on their
but
show.
There were I had fans in the audience. They were all, you know, enjoying it and everything. And yeah, but that was fun. He had a whole world of TV shows. I mean, he had Dance Fever and he had the Rev Griffin Show and a couple other, you know, ones. He had a whole universe of music shows and dance shows. He was an interesting character, you know.
A different time, though. We're talking about how the men, you know, how the men sitting next to you were just, even the manner of speaking back then.
Right. You mean like the Melvin Belli, how he was speaking to me?
Yeah. I think when you sat down, they said, you know, oh, you can sit here, you know, things that might never fly today. Just right. The way they reacted to you.
Yeah, I don't know. I don't pay attention to stuff like that generally, but you know, just
it's probably for the past.
It was just that was a very odd interview. I can't say I even remember what I was thinking. I should have had some odd answers too.
All right, time to take a break as we continue our talk with Josie Cotton.
Hello, Pantheon podcast listeners. Christian Swain here to tell you more about my experience with Raycon earbuds. Our family now has 3 pairs of Raycon earbuds around the house. And my wife just grabbed a pair of the Headphone Pros to replace some headphones from a company that was double the price. And yes, she loves them. Now, if you haven't pulled the trigger on a pair of Raycons, or even if you have, but you're in the market for another pair because they're just that good, well, now is the time to check them out. Because they just launched their upgraded model of the best-selling everyday earbuds. With Raycon's upgraded everyday earbuds, now you also get active noise cancellation, ergonomic design, and multi-point connectivity that lets you pair with 2 devices at once, new quick charge function, 3 customizable sound styles plus awareness mode, available in a variety of vibrant new colors to complement any and all skin tones. I even have a pair of earbuds in a cool green color. I have tried just about every earbud known to humankind, and these Raycons are fantastic. Seriously, if you've been wanting to check out Raycons, there truly is no better time. You're going to ask yourself why you didn't check them out sooner, and Raycon offers a 30-day happiness guarantee. So what are you waiting for? Go to buyraycon.com/pantheon today to get 20% off your Raycon order, plus free shipping. That's right, you'll get 20% off and free shipping at buyraycon.com/pantheon. buyraycon.com/pantheon.
Today's What Difference Does It Make podcast is brought to you by Audible. Audible is offering our listeners a free audiobook with a 30-day trial membership. Just go to audibletrial.com/WDDIM podcast and browse the unmatched selection of audio programs. Download a free title and start listening. It is seriously that easy. Go to audibletrial.com/WDDIM podcast to get started today. Do you have any suggestions? Oh, anything you might listen to on Audible?
Oh, okay. Let me type on Audible right now. And hey, what look at up? That. Flea's got an autobiography and about his when he was known as Mike Balzari. And it's called Acid for the Children. He narrates this.
Are you an Audible subscriber?
I'm not, but I think it's pretty easy, right? What do I need to do?
You need to go to audibletrial.com/WDDIM podcast.
Okay.
Welcome back to the What Difference Does It Make podcast and our interview with Josie Cotton.
Randy Phillips was my manager for years, you know, the Michael Jackson, that one.
Yeah.
So he asked me, well, how does it feel to be a sex object? That was like, and I said, I guess it's better than not being one. I mean, there was some slippery slopes there. I don't think I would answer it the same way now.
Did you think about your image or what? Like, how you wanted to present yourself on stage and you know, on your albums and
well,
videos?
You know, that,
or was this is what Josie was? This is who you are, and this is what you want.
Well, I mean, I had so many different personas, musically and kind of. Aesthetically, I could have gone so many different directions in music. It was a lot bigger than just you know, pop music, girl pop and all that. I didn't quite have the focus that the Payne brothers were able to direct me in, into focusing something into something that was part of my history and love. But you have to, at some point you have to focus what the sound and the look is going to be. You have to do that or no one can focus on you. Like if you're like changing into Edith Piaf and then you're like Tammy Wynette and then you're like, you know, Brazil 66 and you just have to just not move for a second. And they were able to focus me in that sense. They were hugely aware of image and it wasn't anything I was uncomfortable with, but they were wonderful at it, you know, Bobby and Larson Payne.
Did you play the music? Did you do the LA music scene?
You know, I had different bands, and the thing is, Johnny took off so fast, and then we were immediately recording for that 6-month period. So the time that I would have gone and played, we were just in the studio and then putting the record out. And so I kind of missed a lot of live playing that I wish I had been in a part of. Yeah.
So that must have been hard then, when suddenly you have a hit song and you don't have a lot of stage experience.
I played in a lot of bands. Okay. And I was on stage when I was 3 years old in ballet and on production. So I had a whole ballet background. With my father was the ballet instructor, and he would throw me on stage. I'd be doing duets, pas de deux with these little boys, and you know, when I was 4 and 5. So I was really comfortable on stage. I loved being, and that sounds such an awful thing to say.
No,
I love being on stage.
No, not at all.
No, like, yeah. We want our performers to say they love being on stage.
It just sounds so, I don't know, but I could be myself on stage, and it wasn't always the case off stage. So that wasn't the problem with me. Was what happened when I got off stage, basically. So that, you know, you create a world, and that's a safe place. So, but I felt confident as a performer always, no matter what the venue was. If that answers your question,
yeah.
I was going to ask about the period of time after the 80s, like the 90s and the early 2000s. You kind of, I read in an interview somewhere that you had sort of not dropped out. I think it talked about changing, you know, you changed the spelling of your name for a while, kind of, did you drop out of the music scene?
Yeah, I dropped out in the sense that I knew I didn't want to be in major labels anymore. And I knew I wanted to be the one in control of what I was going to do and the music I was going to do. I didn't do well in that. I didn't breed well in captivity. I was someone who just was not going to survive in that world. So I knew that I wanted to keep doing music. So we started my boyfriend and I started a recording studio. And so we were recording other bands. Geza X, he was, my partner at that time. And so I was writing, and we were recording all these really cool bands, and it was always in our house. And I would, you know, make a record, and then the idea of going out and putting it out on a label was just so painful to me. I was just like, oh, let's just start the next record. I was just compiling all these recordings, and I had cold feet about the music business. Honestly, I just kept making them. Once in a while, I would put them out, and just because you make a record, unless it goes out, no one's really heard it. You can't just make tapes. You have to, and I would just throw it out there. So now we're going back and trying to collect on my wayward children and re-release them because they were, it was all crazy with people, the wrong people were selling them and they were, you know, there was some mischief going on the internet.
Yeah. When you say get it out there, how were you getting it out there?
Well, we had a record label and we would put it out there and we would get it in stores and no one knew about it because it was just, I was kind of not really wanting to be known. I would just go, you know, my heart wasn't in just being out in the public. I just, in terms of major record label kind of presence. So I did disappear. But I was always doing music and I was always around me. I love being around people who have dreams like that. And, I didn't want to shatter their dreams, but I just love the music process. I love being in a studio and writing and being in band. I just love all of that. So it was always in my house, you know, recording studio. Well, now it's not in my house, but I still have a recording studio. Yeah. Kitten Robot Studios mm-hmm. is we have. It's in Filipino Town, right?
Kitten yeah. Robot, perfect. What? Yeah. So what flipped the switch then to say, I mean, you've been, before this all pandemic happened, you were playing around a lot. You were on, like, the, you know, those shows. What happened to say, I want to play on stage. I want to present my
music.
Well,
I've been doing it and then I would just disappear and I'd come out. But this last go around, it happened because of, just basically the crew of people I have at our label. We just have like the perfect organization of characters. I don't know. They're all so such good friends of mine and so competent. And I trust they all have my back and they're sane. Those are some new factors I figured in. Like, they're sane? What? And they have my back? No. And then, like, all this wonderful, and just super creative and with backgrounds in the music business. And, you know, Bruce Duff is my manager. Paul Rossler is my partner. And, you know, in this whole, you know, our studio and our label now. So it's just, when you have the right people, it's just amazing how much different it is to be in the world and have it organized and, you know, it's a wonderful feeling.
Yeah. Yeah. Sometimes it takes a whole lifetime to find your team, your people.
Yeah. Like at the last minute, I'm finding like this wonderful experience, but I'm having a great time. People seem really happy. I'm back on the radar and there's such a love for this convertible music record. It's really, it feels wonderful to be putting that out. And it was, I guess, an important record for people in that era. So it feels wonderful to get the, you know, all the love I'm getting is quite incredible.
Deserved. It is a great, it's a great album.
Yeah.
Great record. However we refer to those now.
Yeah.
Yeah. Record albums.
Yeah.
Actually, we got to you because one of your Melanie, the keyboardist in your band.
Yes.
We talked with her and she's like, oh, you have to talk to Josie. She's amazing. I can't believe I've never played with her before, but we hooked up, you know, we get along so well.
Oh, we had the best time.
Yeah.
I mean, what an honor to have her in the band. I mean, it was, you know, just amazing shows we did in on the East Coast and we were supposed to do a tour and of New York and all Philly and all that area. And then, you know, the pandemic, but we had the best time. My bass player, Cherish Alexander and Melanie and I were like we were like Charlie's Angels or something.
She said, yeah.
It was so fun. to just really, I don't know, it was just a lot of girl energy. It was just the best time. And she's always welcome in my world.
That's so nice. Yeah. That's so nice. And don't, I heard you just said something about it, but finding this at the last minute, as if it's late in life. Hopefully yeah. there's music for years to come.
Well, I mean, if it's any indication, I'm just writing so many songs now. So that's my favorite thing in the world. So we'll see how it all turns out. Well, it's not over yet.
That's right. Yeah. You posted something on Instagram saying, started a new album, and it's, I follow your Instagram. I'm very religious about you.
Yes.
But anyway, you said you're starting a new album. It's making, it's very Josie saying the songs are strange. My dreams are stranger. I might be turning into an insect.
Yes.
What is going on, Josie? Please.
Well, I don't know. I mean, I've read a lot of Franz Kafka and.
Oh, say no more.
Yeah. So those are my reference points. You just go up and down and it kind of, I mean, some days don't you feel like are a little more darker than others? And then some days you pop out and you go, oh, okay. And then you go, oh no. And I'm just on that roller coaster. The creativity is taking me into another realm. I don't know what's happening, but I'm just trying to follow it and not judge it too harshly, because it's writing itself at this point. So
it's a great place to be. Love it.
Yeah, it is a good one.
I think that's what we're all trying to do now, right? Is just accept, you know, every day is, you're going to feel a little bit differently, and just go with it.
Yeah, you become very philosophical at some point. You have to, this is it's a caveat of always, you know, you're doing, like you were saying in the beginning, you're doing good. I'm doing good considering. It's always, there's always that caveat now, like considering.
Yeah, exactly.
We get to the place where we can eliminate the considering.
We shouldn't feel bad saying if we happen to be feeling really great one day, we shouldn't feel funny saying that it's okay, right?
Yeah, that's right.
Well, Convertible Music is out now on all streaming services. Soon the vinyl will be out with a new song, right?
Yeah, well, yeah. The digital it's not a new song. It was the B-side of Johnny, Are You Queer? But a lot of people never heard that. Let's do the blackout.
Let's do the... Okay. That sounds very
for
suspicious.
For the time, it's yeah. of the time.
Yes, we're all going to black out.
I feel like I want to do the blackout sometimes. Okay, well, then.
I think we were there in the 80s.
Yeah.
Well, we survived the 80s, so we'll survive this too.
We're still here, yeah. Well, first of all, congratulations on owning your music, getting your children back. Yes. And it's great. I look forward to hearing more and more from you. I encourage everyone to follow Josie on her Instagram. Because it's colorful and fun and
I'll look for you. I've seen your name. I just didn't really realize, you know, you were this guy.
But you can put a name with a face now.
Yeah. No, I can. Yeah, it helps.
Well, wonderful. Well, thank you so much, Josie. This was a lot of
fun. Thank you. Anyway, you guys are just great, and I hope to talk to you again. It was fun.
Oh, for sure.
Definitely. Thank you so much. It was such a pleasure.
Look forward to seeing you out on the road, right?
Yes.
Yes.
Like not, hopefully not running down the road.
Right.
We'll stop for you if we see you.
Please do. Okay, guys.
All right. Thanks a lot. Appreciate it. That was wonderful.
Thank you.
Bye.
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 All right, so that's our episode with Josie Cotton. I had a great time. She's amazing. Don't you love her?
That was so fun. She is a great guest. She's so interesting and fun.
The music is bubbly, and so is her personality, and she's the real deal. I loved it.
She is. She was everything you could possibly want and more.
So I hope you enjoyed it. If you did enjoy it, please give us 5 stars. Give us great reviews. Tell your friends. How do you do that, Holly?
Or just tell us. You can tweet us at WDDIM Podcast. You can tell us on Instagram at WDDIM Podcast. Or you can comment on Facebook and tell us what you think.
We have a nice following on Facebook, so please join us on Facebook. And sign up for our newsletter, WDDIMPodcast.com. So until next week, this is Dave.
This is Holly.
Check you later.
Over and out.
It's NFL draft season, and that means it's time to start thinking about fantasy football. FantasyPoints.com features industry-leading experts and prognosticators using proprietary hand-charted data to help you score more fantasy points. FantasyPoints.com is the place to go for whatever kind of fantasy football you play. Whether you play fantasy football, daily fantasy sports, or do a little bit of everything, Fantasy Points has the meticulously researched content to guide you to victory. And why wait for the fall? Fantasy Points also covers the new spring football league, the UFL. Join the guru, John Hansen, Scott Barrett, Joe Dolan, and other massive names in the fantasy football universe with an exclusive offer. Use code Pantheon for 15% off any Fantasy Points package, including the all-in package, with access to every article, tool, and data nugget that Fantasy Points has to offer. That's FantasyPoints.com and code Pantheon for 15% off at Fantasy Points. FantasyPoints.com, code Pantheon. Score more fantasy points.